Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. So I'm talking for sort of an in crowd, I think. No? Everybody here is working on quantum information. Well, maybe Grief for no longer. Okay, so this is work that was motivated. There's a construction about 10 years ago by Mizell that I think a lot of people wondered about what its use is. And it's a construction that he claimed you would be able to do universal ground state computation with. And there were many open questions about this construction and doubts about it. And the goal was to finally analyze this construction and see how it's part of a larger type of circuit to Hamiltonian construction, so mapping of a quantum circuit to a Hamiltonian, and see some of, you know, look at some of its uses or applications. And I genuinely believe that there will be many more applications, but the problem is also that some of the mathematics is more complicated. Oh, there's, okay, yeah, right. Okay, so there's a paper that you can check out on the archive, and we're preparing some further work with Anna Vershinina, and David Gossett is also involved to analyze some of the adiabatic computation. Now, I was gonna start with the usual construction. And so this, do people want to, but maybe this is very standard. So who wants to hear a bit more about this? Yeah, okay, so we have a circuit with n qubits, and we have a bunch of gates. We order the gates from U1 to UL. And in order to construct our Hamiltonian, we define a clock register. So this construction is due to originally Feynman, and then it was used by Kitaev to construct for using quantum complexity theory. So we define one big clock, and this clock runs from time t is zero to t is l. And we define a circuit Hamiltonian like this. There are terms which let the clock go from time t minus one to t, and at that point the gate ut is done. And there must be a Hermitian conjugate, so it's Hermitian. And there are also these terms, which actually don't do very much. It just makes this whole term positive semi-definite, but we could also emit it. Now, the clock, of course, is in general log L qubits long. So this type of interaction is not very local. It's not very physical. So then you have to do more work to realize this clock. So you can say, well, I realize this clock in the as a particle hopping on a line, and where the particle is what the time it reads. That's a particle clock. You can also realize it as a domain wall clock, where you represent it also as a bit string, where on the left there are lots of ones, and the right it's all zeros. And where that domain wall is, and the transition from ones to zero, that's where the clock is. Now, of course, if you left such a larger space and with bit strings, there all will be clock states which do not look like lots of ones here and lots of zeros there. So you need to add terms in Hamiltonian that penalize this. Let's say, well, because we're interested in the ground space, ground state of this Hamiltonian, you need to add terms that say those are not legal clock states. Okay, so why is this circuit Hamiltonian interesting? Because the ground state of this Hamiltonian is the history state of the circuit. So we're not restricting the input to the circuit. It can be any state psi. And then this history state is a uniform superposition over all possible times. And for each time, I have the corresponding state of the circuit. And then, of course, if I want to use the state, so let's imagine that I want to prepare this adiabatically. The idea is that by some means I will be in this history state, for example. Then you want to, of course, read out the answer from the computation. Now, if you have this state, you see that with probability 1 over L plus 1, you get a random time. You measure a random time, and then you get this state. You know? But so the idea is then is that you say, well, the original circuit maybe had gates U1 to UL, but now I'm adding L identity gates to it at the end. So then I construct the circuit Hamiltonian for this slightly longer circuit. Then, of course, it doesn't matter whether I find time T is L or T is L plus 1 or further, because there's no further action on the state. So any of those times is good. So there's sort of an output window. So basically the upshot is that with probability, which is a constant, if you have the state, you can find the output of the circuit. Okay, so now then a lot of work has gone into massaging this Hamiltonian into something that is more physical, yes?
Sorry, I do not understand. So this pi is the ground state of eight circuit?
Mm-hmm.
So where is the input state?
The input state is an arbitrary, so it's not a unique ground state. It's very degenerate. Indeed, I can put in any state here, any bit string, and it will be a ground state. So if I say it's the ground state, it's actually a hugely degenerate ground space.
You're putting it somewhere.
Yeah, I put in some state, but the thing is that, of course, I can add, which we don't typically does if you use this for adiabatic computation, you add another term to the Hamiltonian, which constrains the input state, and then your ground state will be unique. Yeah. Okay. So there is some features like I already discussed. You can understand it this way. You can realize this clock as a domain-wall clock or a particle clock. And if you do that, then you can kind of understand that these transitions from time t minus 1 to t, they now be local transitions. They would only act on those clock bits at that, that this particle just has to be moved one up and so on. And so you get actually these types of terms that become done become act on 3 or 2 clock qubits. So you get a Hamiltonian which is local in that sense. Now the nice thing about this Hamiltonian, which allows some analysis, is that it has a very simple spectrum. You can unitarily transform away the actual gates that you do, and then what you see, it's just hopping on the line. So then you can, this is a standard result, that the spectrum, then the energies, it's sort of these plane waves, and the gap scales like 1 over L squared, where L is the length of this line. Okay. Now, what are the uses of this Hamiltonian? So there are 3 uses, at least in theory. You can ask, practically, is this actually useful? But it's a different question. The first use is as a quantum walk. And this is close to what Feynman had thought about originally. He had the idea that you would you wouldn't initialize the clock at a certain time, but you would initialize it as a superposition of time, such that it represents a wave packet with a forward-going momentum. And so if you just apply the Hamiltonian, it would run forward, and it would at some time arrive at the output at the end of the circuit at the time that's late enough so we can read out the answer of the computation. But you can also look at a walk which starts in initial state, then you say, well, I evolve it for a random time. And there are also constructions where you modify the weights in the Hamiltonian such that. You modify the weight such that you actually, for a fixed time, you'll get, for deterministic time, you'll transfer all the weight to the output time. And so this actually was originally done by Usher Paris, I think, in a paper, very old paper. One thing I want to note, which was a technical problem in our analysis, which actually later realized maybe we could circumvent. But we did it this way, is that, and I think it actually has some nice features, we can, it's sort of a very simple observation, you can let time run in a circle. And so in principle, it's a line where the computation runs in that way, so then we start off in there, and then we evolve in that direction. Of course, the Hamiltonian also maps you back and so on. But you can also imagine that you set up the gates in a circle. And so you have some time t is 0 here. And then you say, well, if there is a time t is 1 here, but you could also go to sort of t is minus 1 this way. And if you evolve this way, you apply u1 and u2, et cetera, going this way. And if you go this way, you similarly apply u1, u2 this way. And then, of course, in that fashion, it's clear that for any point here, the unitary evolution that you apply when, if you go this way around the circle is the same as the unitary evolution that you apply going that way around the circle. And this is true for this point because you go from t is zero, say, all the way over there. You apply the sequence of unitary, the same thing over here. But actually, you could play with this. I think this is actually interesting. But so you could say, well, what if I choose these gates to be different? What is it then? Now, the point is what's interesting is that there is a subset, or it's actually a subspace of states such that the it's basically a claim that if I look at the unitary, let's see, I take a state here, psi, and I can look at the unitary evolution that would be applied if I go all the way around the circle, right? So I call that U loop on psi. And if U loop on psi is psi, then for that psi here, I get a ground state. But if psi does not, so for example, I put psi at this t is zero, so it actually, if I construct this, if I use this loop construction, and I allow more something more general, then I actually I actually restrict the input space of states. You know? And so it's sort of a self-consistency check that the input states have to be such that the dynamics is consistent. Yeah? I don't know. I can imagine there are applications of this actually to do it that way, but that's not what we explored. I just want to mention it. Are there questions about this?
So what happens if you choose an input state which is not an eigenstate of U?
It's not a ground state then, so you get excitation. So the thing is, there's no So if there's no state that has that property, all the states are have higher energy. So the thing is, this is a positive semi-definite Hamiltonian. So I'm looking for a state which has zero energy. And you can just check your mathematical equations, and you just see that if you have states for which this holds, it will be a ground state, and those are the only ones. Yeah, so you could say, well, maybe these are special gates, only the classical. Well, it's a space. It's not as, because I was thinking first, maybe I can constrain them to be bit strings, so only classical. But this is a subspace. It's not, so it can't be a class of bit strings. But I mean, you could also ask, well, you know, maybe I can make bubbles here and so on. And I have other further self-consistency. I don't know. I mean, it's a different thing. This is actually not really what my talk is about. And I don't know what it's good for. But I think it may be useful. Okay. So... So the second use is for quantum adiabatic computation. So this is in a paper with many authors, Aronov and Van Damme and Landau and Lloyd and whatever, there was it was shown that quantum computation using quantum circuit is the same as the same complexity as quantum computation using purely by means of quantum adiabatic, just purely quantum adiabatic computation. Yeah, so you can everything you can do in a circuit, you can do with a quantum adiabatic computation. And the way this goes is also naturally via this construction, because the real work you have to do is that whatever you can do with a circuit, you can do with a quantum adiabatic computation. And so the idea is that I put this on the slide. Maybe I should actually have this. So the original construction in that paper is something where you take the circuit Hamiltonian with a parameter T. This is not related to the other T's we had. We could also call this S. And we take some initial Hamiltonian. And we have a linear path that interpolates between them. So when this parameter is zero, we have the initial Hamiltonian. The initial Hamiltonian will contain terms which say that the t should be zero, and that at t is zero, my qubits have to be set properly, according to what my quantum circuit does. And then the work in this, what I describe above here, is actually a slightly different thing, but it's not so useful to actually discuss now. You have to do some work in order to show that this adiabatic computation has a 1 over poly n gap everywhere. And so the idea is that the circuit Hamiltonian has this property, because then the gap analysis is very simple. But you have to do more work to show that the linear combination of the two is also has a 1 over poly n gap.
Can you repeat what yeah.
H-init
is?
H-init, it's something that says the, well, there are two terms. One is that if t is zero, there's a term which says, let's say there's some input qubits, or maybe they're all input qubits. So, well, let's say there's a set of qubits in called S-in that have to be set to zero. So what this term does is it kind of says, if the time is zero, then if the state is one, I pick up an energy. So I pick up no energy if it stays zero or if the time is different. And then there is another term which I think just does the, which initializes the time to zero. I'm not sure that this is exactly the form. But the init is a sum of these two terms.
But then this Hamiltonian is non-degenerate, and we can compute the ground state. We can prepare it.
Yes. Yes. If you yes, because what you do is that you you would initialize your qubit. Well, of course, you could just say, in some sense, in adiabatic computation, you can also say, well, I just put in a state. Even if the ground space is degenerate, if there's no transitions between the two, between the different levels, who cares? But of course, there's noise and so on. But you also, you can also say, well, I just, at the beginning, I have one unique ground state which has lowest energy. And that is the state where the clock is, actually this should not be the, yeah, this is not the right term because the clock should be set to zero. So it's like, you know, this term. And the qubits are set in the proper state, yeah. But indeed, at the end, okay, so it, you can relax it a bit, but then you it's kind of more messy to see what noise and perturbations will do. So anyhow, okay. Okay, so the other use is in quantum complexity theory. So that's the use that Kiteev had for this construction. What do you want to say about this? Okay, so very briefly, so what we know about, so you have to show, what you want to show is that for every problem in QMA, I can map that problem onto determining the ground state energy of a Hamiltonian. So meaning that if I could solve the problem of determining the ground state energy of a Hamiltonian, I could solve any problem in QMA. Yeah, because every problem I can translate, you know, there's a decision problem, is it yes or no, it's a problem in QMA. And I can translate this problem whether the into the question of whether the energy of a Hamiltonian, whether the ground state energy of a Hamiltonian is less than something or higher than something else. And so if I had an oracle for solving that problem, I could solve the original problem. But what do we know about problems in QMA? I don't know. We only know that there is a verification. So what do we know about problems in QMA? You know that there's a verification circuit, meaning that if the answer is yes, then somebody can give you a proof, a quantum state, and you run a quantum computation, a circuit, and you output yes, yeah, with high probability. That's what, and we also know that if the somebody, some, if the answer is no, and somebody gives you a quantum state, and you run that same circuit, then with high probability output will be no. So we only know about the existence of the circuit and these input states. So it's very natural to say, well, then I construct the circuit Hamiltonian of that circuit. Yeah? And if the output, if the input is a good proof that the answer is yes, then what I want is I want my Hamiltonian, my circuit Hamiltonian, have very low energy. So what I want is something, okay, maybe I have this circuit that I run also has some ancilla qubits, which I should put in to zero. So that's what's called H input. And I construct the circuit Hamiltonian of the verification circuit. And I've said already that the circuit Hamiltonian has a degenerate ground space. Any input's good. So it always will have zero energy if I construct this way and I put my ancilla qubits in the right state. So that would not be sufficient. So now I also want to have a term that looks at the output. Huh? Because the idea is that what I do know is that if the answer to the problem is yes, then there exists an input state such that the output should be, say, one. So I want to put that term in the Hamiltonian. And so that's the construction, then you check the output. So the idea is that you get a low energy state if there exists an input such that the circuit outputs one, and only high energy states when the circuit outputs zero. And so you need to do a bit more work, because you're not only having the circuit Hamiltonian and its spectral gap, but you have to look at, if you add these terms, can I say that, you know, if the answer to the decision problem is yes, I have a low energy state, and more in particular, and that's the real work, if the answer to the computation is no, then all the eigenvalues are above something. And that's the kind of tedious work that one has to do. Okay, so now I want to motivate, maybe I'm going too slow, but okay, so we don't have that many tricks in quantum complexity theory. So we have perturbation gadgets, which map, you know, five local term onto a three local term, and perhaps with some structure and so on. We have constructions that use modifications of this quantum Cook-Levin theorem, the construction I just discussed. But I think we need sort of new tricks, and I hope that this construction may give some new tricks. Okay, I don't want to say too much because I think I want to. So the idea is that this is one of the results of the space-time construction gives a new class of Hamiltonians that I can prove to be QMA complete. In some sense, it's not very strong, but I don't know, it's different. I think there are other things that are interesting about it. Okay, so what we're able to do, so this space-time construction is a way of mapping a quantum circuit onto a Hamiltonian that preserves a lot more properties of the original circuit, namely the interaction structure. So for example, you could say I have a line of qubits in 1D, maybe I have a periodic boundary conditions in space, and they only act with nearest neighbor. And this circuit has some depth D. And I want to understand how the circuit Hamiltonian I'll build depends on some of these properties. Maybe it depends in an interesting way on D. But anyhow, what I can say, of course, that such a circle is universal for computation if D is polynomial. So if I want to apply this for uses for universal quantum computation, I may as well restrict myself to these circuits. And it turns out that analysis is feasible and would be a lot harder for general circuits. Okay, so I want to, I had prepared some very nice drawings, but then I couldn't, when I scanned them, they actually, I couldn't see anything. So I have to learn how the scanner works here still. Okay, so what I want to now say about the Mizell model, because I referred to Mizell at the beginning. What was his model? And so what is the Hamiltonian that he constructed? So you have that 1D circuit that I just described. There's qubits sitting on the line, and they interact with nearest neighbors. And so what I'm now going to do is for every qubit Q, I'm going to make a, let's say, a double track on which a particle can hop. And if the particle is on the top track, I call it, it's in the state zero. And if the particle is on the bottom track, it's in the state one. And where it is on this track is sort of like it's the clock of the particle. Yeah? So I start the computation with the particle, say, in zero, and the particle is there. Now, you can imagine it, if I want to do a... So what I'm now going to describe is how we build the circuit Hamiltonian, yeah? Or how he writes a circuit Hamiltonian in terms of hopping particles and what kind of terms you have. So if your circuit, let's say there's a NOT gate happening on this particle, then I want a term in the Hamiltonian which does this. It annihilates the particle there and it creates the particle there. Right, very natural. And of course, I also want a term where if the particle, it annihilates the particle here, and it would create the particle there. So there would be two terms. Yeah. That's a NOT gate. Now, if I had a Hadamard gate in a circle, it's also fairly natural. I would say the particle has been hopping. See, it always moves forward when it's done a gate. It goes to the next time slot, right? So the time moves, its clock moves forward, and the internal state represented by whether it's here or there gets changed. If you want to do a Hadamard gate, then you'd have to have an interaction by which you, with some amplitude, you mop, you with some amplitude 1 over the square root of 2, you move there, and with some amplitude, you move there. And so it's, again, two terms, but the strength of the term. So I annihilate the particle here and I create it there with a strength 1 over square root of 2. And I could also create it there with a strength 1 over square root of 2. And of course, I also need to have terms if the particle's there. It gets created there with some amplitude and it created there with a negative amplitude, right, to do the Hadamard. Okay, so single qubit gate. So the idea here is now the particle hops on this track, and the where it is on this track, I can call time, right? So here, t is zero, and when a gate happens, then the time gets updated. So here's t is one. So each particle has, this particle has its own clock, and otherwise it's just similar as this Kitaev, this Feynman Hamiltonian, but it's only for a single, it's only single qubit gates, yeah? Yeah.
I'm trying to understand the meaning of this.
Yeah.
So you've replaced one qubit by a collection of L qubits?
Yes, you could say that, yeah. So indeed, it's just about, it's a collection of actually two L qubits, because right? It's the top, there's a top track.
So these two tracks correspond to two different collections?
Well, it's just, no, it's so I have one qubit in the original circuit, Q, and it can have two states, right? It can be zero or one. And whether it's on the top track or the bottom track is that internal degree of freedom, whether it's zero or one. And so there are, you could say, there's a fermionic mode, I don't know whether that makes more sense. There's a line of fermionic or bosonic modes on this top track and similar below it on this bottom track.
So yeah. Is replaced by
2 times L modes or qubits. I mean, because actually the thing, the sine factor, there's no, because it's only in 1D, there's no sine problem. So if it's bosons or fermions or just particles, it doesn't matter. It's just that they're annihilated and created at the next, further down the line, so to say. I don't know what's it. Okay, and this length is the depth of the circuit, because I have the circuit that I showed has only 2 qubit gates, so this doesn't quite apply. So now, what about 2 qubit gates? Yeah. So for 2 qubit gates, yeah.
When you move forward in time, do you erase what happens previously, or do you just change what happens?
What you have in a Hamiltonian is a term that annihilates a particle and creates it at the next to it.
Okay,
yeah, in that sense, you erase. Yeah. So there is only one particle on each track.
Yeah.
So it is many modes, but there's only one particle here that is important to need to. Okay. So what happens now? I have this.
Sorry, you just said there's only one particle in each track, but is there 2 tracks or 1 track?
Sorry, this is a track, the double track. Yeah, sorry.
So when you said that there is no sine problem, it's because it's a single particle.
Yeah, but
being one dimension.
Yes, I mean that is the number of particles conserved because the particles cannot hop. I will have more particles in a moment. This is only 1 qubit, but they cannot hop. They have got off the double track, so it's they. Okay, so now I have one qubit Q1, and I have a qubit Q2, and so it also has these tracks. Maybe I should erase them. I had this very beautiful drawing. I can't make it as nice. I had a real gate. So I had the particles here. So let's say this particle is just in a zero, and it's over here, this particle here. And then there is a gate happening. So this I had as a gate. So the idea, it's a physical gate. And the idea is that the particles, they have to hop jointly over the gate. So there is an interaction which says, annihilate the particles there and create them there. Jointly. So that's not quite physical, right? I mean, there's no... It's physical, but I mean, you have to get it from perturbation gadgets or things like that. It's not something that you get out directly. Yeah. But you want something to do with some controlled NOT gate or a controlled U gate. So the way you can do it is say, well, this is like my control qubit. So if this is zero, I have a term which says annihilate the particle here, create it there. In that case, this particle hops straight. Huh? And if it's there, you if it you annihilate it here, you create it there, or you, there's another term, annihilate it here, create it there. But of course, if this particle is here, then you say, you annihilate it here, create it there, and this one is annihilated here and created there, right? So you do a NOT gate. Is this clear? Okay, so so the interaction is fairly simple, and I'm working on trying to reduce it to something that is physical, and I think that's probably possible. But one of the important things is that if the particle, what happens if the particles are not there, or one of the particles is there? Then the terms that I construct have zero energy. Because, you know, you annihilate both particles, but if one is not there, it is zero. Okay, so the Hamiltonian we have is that of a interacting fermion, or boson, or particle Hamiltonian. And the interactions are single particle hopping, which is fairly physical, simple, and then this joint hopping, okay, which is, say, not directly, but it's much closer to something that's physical than like an arbitrary five local interaction, which is what you get from in the standard construction. Okay, so now I want to formalize it a bit, because what this actually is a particular way, it's a construction where every qubit has its own clock. Remember, in the Feynman-Kitaev construction, there was one big clock and it moved forward when gates are happening. But in this new construction, every qubit has its own clock. And this is just a particular clock realization. Yeah, it's just some 1D line. And it's kind of mixed up with the internal state of the qubit or the computation. So now we can write this a bit, you know, do more formal and say, well, what we just have this space-time construction is we have a clock for each qubit in our circuit. Yeah? And this circuit has some depth d, so this clock runs from 0 to d. So now I have to create a new register, which is a union of all these clocks. And these clocks clearly do not need to be synchronized. Yeah? Because if I have a circuit with one qubit just undergoes only single qubit transformations, then I have a possible state where that clock state is very different from the others. And the term in the circuit Hamiltonian, what you need to do gates, is something which says that if two qubits have the same time, and that time is here, and you know I have to do a gate here, then I do my unitary on the internal state of the qubits, and I move the time forward. And there is also this term, so the times here of the two qubits are actually P and Q are S, and they're moved to S plus 1. And then there's also a term to make the Hamiltonian positive semi-definite, and it actually does really play a role in our construction, that we'll see that later. Okay, so the idea is that the times of the interaction qubit are moved ahead or backward if they're synchronized. So then one needs to understand what happens now. What does the Hamiltonian do? So let's imagine that all the qubits are at the beginning here, and they all have their clocks so set to zero. Yeah. And what kind of configurations does this Hamiltonian, this circuit Hamiltonian generate? Well, the point is that qubits can only update their times together, huh, through a gate. So this is a configuration where these two qubits, they have hopped through this gate, and those two as well, these are still there.
Yeah. Now all of our gates are not necessarily C-knots, but rather, even if they're not C-knots, even if they're coupled, they still have a coupling, and then they have to be...
But it could be control U's. But there could be any, yeah, I mean, in the way it's written there, it's any two qubit unitary that, in this Mizell thing, we know how to do it for control U, and I think it also holds more for general unitary gates, but I actually haven't done this. Yeah, sure, and in this general, yeah, it doesn't matter what the unitary is, yeah. Okay, so you generate a bunch of, you generate a bunch of configurations this way. So you can ask, what configurations can I reach from having all the clocks to be the same? And those configurations I call valid time configuration. And it's sort of obvious that I cannot reach a configuration where this blue dot is where the time is, right? So where the particle is in that construction. So I cannot have a configuration where this qubit has its clock over here and its neighbor has the clock over here, right? How would I get this contribution? One is before that, you know, before the gate, the other one is after. So the point is that qubits can be unsynchronized, but there is a causal structure, of course, to this, yeah? So we call valid time configurations the ones that we can reach, and the Hamiltonian preserves the subspace. So the thing is that there is, of course, so you can also, this is a bit suggestive, but this is an example of how things can be not synchronized. So let's imagine these two qubits have synchronized times, but note that because of the interaction structure, I am allowed, this is a possible configuration where this qubit has already gone through that gate because that has nothing to do with that. So its partner was over there and then its partner already moved on to there. So there is a very, so you could call, you know, this is some configuration, and you could call this sort of a light-like interval. That's to say, this is a point in space-time, right? It's a position in space and it has a time here. It's just, you know, we're in 1+1. And you could say that this interval between this space-time interval for this particle versus that is light-like in this picture. Yeah? So that responds to some this metric. And if you do for a high-dimensional circuit, you would also get such a, you know, such a light cone because of just the basic causal structure of the circuit. So that's not that's just some language. Okay. So now. So one thing we had to solve is say, okay, we have our circuit Hamiltonian. I first want to understand whether the ground state of that circuit Hamiltonian is still some kind of history state, or if there are other ground states that have zero energy that I don't tell me any, have no information about the circuit. That would not be very good. Yeah? So I said, well, there are valid time configurations, there are invalid time configurations. Now, I could, later I will put a penalty, an explicit local penalty on being an invalid time configuration. And so I add a term to the circuit Hamiltonian, which says those configurations will have at least order one energy. So they can't be ground states. So then I'm left with the valid time configurations. But in the valid time configuration, it could be, in principle, and I'll show you a picture of that, that all the particles are not synchronized, all their times. Yeah? So I call that sort of pure light-like, zero energy. Because if everybody is synchronized, that terms in Hamiltonian have zero energy. And you can actually avoid this because you can avoid it in this simple way. If the circuit had a beginning of an end, you say, well, look, this is where the circuit starts. So if this qubit has the times zero here, then its partner cannot have a time earlier. This doesn't exist. So it has to be synchronized. And when you have that, so it's like what you get, if you look at it as a thing, you maybe have segments that are like this, wherever everybody's synchronized, but then you have some segment that's like this. And if you have periodic boundary condition in space, you have to put this together. And in this part where qubits are synchronized, this circuit Hamiltonian, you know, can move this, right? It can move it forward, it can move it backward. So it's like, you know, it's vibrating this way. Anyhow, so you can avoid these kind of configurations, but you can have odd, I'll show this in a moment, an odd situation where you cannot avoid them, but this is for our complexity result, not interesting. So you can prove for these types of circuit that indeed the ground state, ground space, if you don't look at the input, is sort of a history state. And it's a superposition over all, I call this proper, but I meant to say it's valid times. Valid times, and such that you've done the gates V, you've done a bunch of units there. Maybe I should say it this way. So let me look at the circuit, and let me look at the valid time configuration. It's just some kind of string. And what does it actually mean? It means that these gates have already been done. The order in which they're done is irrelevant. So that is the total, the unitary V going from the zero, all, you know, zero configuration to that string T. So this is the string T. Okay. Yeah, so this is like a, just an oddball thing. So we can have, so we actually, for technical reasons, well, I said this before, we take a periodic boundary condition in space, just make it nice translation invariant, and we also take periodic boundary conditions in time, which was this in this Feynman-Yutaev thing, we had a clock that run, you know, circular. Yeah. And so now with this thing, you can actually construct a very funny thing, which I don't know, it's not for, but this, I just want to show it to you. So you can actually construct a loop. So you can say, well, can I construct a zero energy state that just keeps on going? It's pure light-like. And how would I do that? Well, let's have a look at this. Let's do construct. So if the, let's say the depth of the circle, so this is the depth and this is n, and I have a periodic boundary condition in this direction and in that direction, so I have a torus, yeah? And I'm not showing this here, I'm showing it as a cylinder, but we have to glue these things together. And if d is much longer than n, then I cannot have, what happens then? So I'm here on this, this is all in synchronized, this is this light-like thing, and I come over here and I say, well, I have to identify this qubit with that qubit, but wait a moment, the time is over there, so this doesn't work. So actually what I have to do is something where I do like this, and well, I have to get back to, let me see, I have to get back to there. So I have to match, this has to be matched with that, yeah? So I always have a segment where I have to, it's synchronized, and this can move, it has never had zero energy. But what if this, you know, if this configuration is different, and it has to be matched with an integer, actually we have 2D, this is actually 2D in our case, and this is N. So then, I'm not sure I can draw this, then I can keep on going, right? So I go like this, okay, at this point I come back here and I keep going there, and then I come back there, I go there, and now I have to, well, I'm not matched, but I want to actually go back there and okay, but you kind of understand that if these are the right integers, I can come back to myself, yeah? So what this means is that you go along, you travel along this well, the speed of light, I don't know, it's suggestive, and you actually get back to the same position, yeah? Because you need that this time is circular in this thing. But it's just sort of an oddball configuration.
So, Barbara, even if it's not integer, I mean, have one where it goes around and then it goes, you know, space-like for a bit.
Yeah, if you allow it to go space-like, you can match it, yes, I think. Right? Because then, but this one, no, the point is that if it's space-like, it starts moving, right? I want to construct something that's purely zero energy.
But you can have superposition, then you have superposition over cases where the space-like part is in different places. Right? Because you get, when you have something that goes like this, and then it goes like this.
Yes, right? Yeah, you can have these things. You mean this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That kink can move forward and backward.
Yes, yeah.
That seems like a zero energy state, right?
No, because this kink moves, so the thing, the kink, no, because you can move this kink forward, and then it just travels. You mean it just travels along? Yes, maybe it's also zero energy, because it just keeps on going around.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, because it's closed, because it doesn't ever, even the point is you want to avoid it hits other configurations. Yeah, I think that's true, yeah.
So in general, you have some...
Yeah, that's a good observation.
Right?
Sorry, what?
You have some winding number in this direction.
Yeah, in that case, yes, there is some, yeah, you can wind around several, yeah.
And then the speed, the light, it sets another one to how large this can be.
Yes, well, then we understand what you're saying.
This one is more complicated because the kink can break up and...
Well, you mean it can... You could, well, it could go like... You mean like this?
Yeah.
But it's bounded maybe in this region that I don't know. Well,
I don't think so, because you can have one that goes... You goes like
no, not bound. It could move forward.
Light-like thing and another little thing. But
But the point, it has to be, if it's going to be zero energy, it has to be closed in a smaller subspace. You know, it has to be a...
But
I understand. Sorry. What?
I'm trying to define such situations so that you can design a Hamiltonian.
No, because I cannot penalize these configurations. I don't know how to penalize these configurations. So in my construction, so we have a circuit where actually D is larger than N. So we will always have this this type of these kinks, and so it always move. And with, so the thing is that our Hamiltonian are represented as a Laplacian on a graph, and we know that then it's fully connected, and we can say, okay, then it has a unique ground state. But that is just for our circuit. But you can think about other situations where you may, you know, like this funny situation is, I cannot, and I don't know how to get rid of this. I think it's, or I don't know, invoke a Higgs mechanism or something. I don't know.
But you say you're not worried because the circuit you're...
In my, yes, in my concrete application, I have a circuit that I can avoid that. I'm penalizing the invalid configurations. So these are sort of not physical. And these zero energy configurations, I have, I just don't have. They always be connected, they will spread out. So this thing will transform like this, it will become the old synchronized state, and then, you know, whatever, everything can happen. Right, so it always connects to the rest of the phase space. And so the question is like this, I'm not 100% sure, but okay, we can discuss this. How am I doing, so till five, right, I'm going. Okay, so one thing I want to, so the real work we did was we had to bound this gap. So this is very important, and this, of course, what got everybody stuck on this construction, because this is not really, people have looked at this before, and that's non-trivial. And it is still non-trivial. I think if you start with a two-dimensional circuit, you'd have a membrane, or something higher dimensional, or a mirror, or whatever. I don't know how to analyze, or haven't looked at it, but... So one thing we can represent this circuit slightly differently. So let's imagine I have a, it's not really straight. This is now a qubit with its times. And this is actually a gate. So what this means is that I have two qubits here, so their times are here, they're synchronized, look, they're on the one line, and they move forward. And then this gate happens, right? So every box is a gate. And so what are these strings? They're just, you know, there's some pattern like this. I should draw it in red. Right? It's just this boundary of this sort of a domain wall that you have. And then you can kind of understand that these strings are actually fairly easy to characterize. Because what happens is you say, well, okay, this is, you know, going left, I call a 1, and going right, I call a 0. So this is just some n-bit string. Now, then there are some technical things that I'm working with periodic boundary conditions. And, oh yeah, so and what happens when, what does the circuit Hamiltonian do? It lets the string wiggle, meaning that this thing gets mapped onto this. And that can be mapped onto that. But if I have a segment that goes like straight, I cannot deform this. So this, the length of the string is preserved. And it turns out, so we had a torus because we have periodic boundary conditions in space and time. And we can bound the gap. But actually, it turns out if you describe the dynamics of the circuit Hamiltonian with respect to this string characterization, so in the subspace where I only have these string, you know, these valid time configurations, it is a Heisenberg model. You could understand that because it's a spin a half Heisenberg model, and the number of ones is, you just have it's a fixed number of ones because the string has to come back to itself. And it's the ferromagnetic Heisenberg model. And what you can understand is that what the gate does, if I have 1, 0 here, it maps it onto 0, 1. Yeah? But if I have some interaction with this like 0, 0 here, that's not mapped onto 1, 1. So that, I don't know, there's other ways to The fact that it's a Heisenberg model and not just a single particle hopping is because I actually have a term in the Hamiltonian which is diagonal. And only when I have that term do I get the history state. Then it's a Laplacian graph and I get the history state. If I would drop this term, my Hamiltonian would map onto a single particle hopping, like this 1, 0 will be mapped on 0, 1, as if this particle goes down. But then I don't know what the ground state is actually. Well, yeah. Well, I sort of know what the ground state, well, let me see. I'm not sure the ground state is the right state for QMA, for QMA construction. Okay, I think I want to cut this short. So for QMA, we need to penalize these invalid configurations. We do this by some local terms, which are products of particle number here times particle numbers there. So they're of low, they're kind of, you know, physical in a sense. Okay, so now, what do I want to do now? Because I have 10 minutes, I guess. Okay, so what I want to report now, as in the last 10 minutes, is just some further work we're doing. And because we realized a few things after this paper came about, that there's actually, it's a bit simpler. So we want to understand also whether we can use this model for universal adiabatic computation and for a quantum walk. And then we realized that it's actually much more convenient to not take these periodic boundary conditions in time and space, but to have this lattice where there's sort of some qubits are useless. Let's say the qubits are on the time, and so this every box is a gate. Now I'm gonna probably just have a region here. Now this is four boxes, so four gates, but I want to have an interaction region here where the gates are non-trivial, and here it's all the identity, and I actually, you know, it's just sort of like I want the string to be in the output region, in that region. So the nice thing is now that the string is going to be fixed here. So a possible configuration is something like this. And it's going to be fixed here. So what all the dynamics that the circuit does is to move the string back and forth. And so Jansing has actually looked at this a little bit in a different setting. And he looked at the quantum walk. He found some results for this. And we find some more important results. But one thing I want to say, which is interesting, I find, is that this geometry, so initially the string looks like this. So you see actually the qubits are not synchronized. Well, you could call this you call their times. But in some ways you'd say, well, this top qubit has this time, one, this is an earlier time, and so on. Yeah, that's the initial string. And now we could say we want a quantum walk, we apply the circuit Hamiltonian, what happens? And there's something, how do you say?
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. The setting you're analyzing. So now you want to have a Hamiltonian acting on this two-dimensional lattice,
mm-hmm.
and you start with a given state.
Yes, there are two things I want to do with this geometry. One, I want to say something about that we could do, this geometry is good to do adiabatic computation. So in adiabatic computation, I at the end, I have to end up with a circuit Hamiltonian, but in the beginning, I have to set my clock qubits, and I have to show that I can bound the gap. And I was very worried about this is not so easy, because the bounding the gap for the circuit Hamiltonian by itself is already hard. So how can you do this more advanced analysis? And the other thing is you could look at the quantum walk in this situation, where indeed you start with a string, and you see, well, how does it move forward? Is it doing the computation? And we're doing more, there's very nice detailed analysis that you can do for this. But there's also a point in which this is really different from this, the kind of walk you would do in this Feynman-Kitaev construction. And that's because of an entropy argument. So the point here is that if you choose, so Jansing, so these are results not by myself, but by Jansing, and I just want to say something about the physical meaning of it, is that, so we have a circuit region, which is K by K, which is where all the action happens. And there is, this is all cube, you know, the times move forward, but the identity gains. So we want the string, which goes like this, from this point to that point, we want it to be in that output region. Yeah? And you can ask how efficiently does this? Well, one result you can show, well, it does this efficiently, and one of the tricks is that, okay, so let's take k to be n over 4, so this is n over 2, and let's take k to be n over 4 minus some constant times a square root. Then the point is that if you look at the number of strings that go through, still go through the circuit region versus the number of strings that you have in total, it's exponentially small, just because of an entropy argument. So you could also look at it this way. Initially, I start with, this is like a bit string, and I all have these ones here, and this is all zeros here. And what does the Hamiltonian do? It just lets these particles diffuse. So this is a very unlikely configuration. Yeah? So it's in this model, it's entropy that pushes the computation forward. And also, I think similarly, if you'd say, well, I have a if my ground state is a uniform state over all these strings, then actually the total amplitude on this is very, very small. Yeah? So there is a natural, just by putting this initial configuration is, there's a natural notion of, well, how do you say, I wouldn't say it that way. Okay, so the entropy pushes the computation forward in this way. And you don't have that in this, you don't have that in a Feynman model where you just have one clock that goes randomly back and forth.
So what motivates the existence of pore size of the output region?
Because of this entropy thing, it makes it easy to show, the point is that you have to take this k to be less than, you know, n over 4 minus the square root, and then you get use a Chernoff bound that the number of strings,
if you have a circuit,
yeah,
right, and it's completely confined to
that little one,
diamond in the left-hand corner,
yeah,
all the qubits that would be affected by the circuit are ones which will pass through that diamond, right? So the ones that are,
yeah, here they're just they're dummy qubits that are there to push the computation along in some ways, and you could. That's the way. I mean, you do that for the Feynman-Kitaev construction also, where you have additional gates, and it, you know, they're just doing the identity. It just do you know, for the adiabatic computation, you get a higher probability of measuring the right output. But in this way, this has a much bigger effect. In well, not, maybe not saying this so clearly. Anyhow, so what I want to say at the last thing, so how do we do quantum adiabatic computation? So it turns out there's a very natural way for this geometry to set up to define a quantum adiabatic path. And the idea is to say, what I want, okay, I have my circuit Hamiltonian, I want some interpolation of that with something that makes the initial state, where the string goes like this, to be the favored state, right? And then, if I have that initial state, then I also I put a penalty on, you know, the qubits have to be set to the right value. But let's look at how I can favor this string over all others. Yeah. Now, I can do that by taking a Hamiltonian that says the clocks of nearest neighbor qubits should be not synchronized. Yeah. Because then it goes like, you know, it has this light, it's this light-like thing. But then, of course, I obtain two configurations. And the point is that this string has to go from there to there, right? And so there are two configurations that do that, this one and that one, of course. Yeah. So I have to break the symmetry. So what I do is I say, well, I want this bit, you know, this is 1 if it goes that way and 0 if it goes that way. I want this bit to be 1 and this bit to be 0. That will favor that configuration over the other one. And so that's called H past, which breaks the, you know, the past and the future or whatever. And what is nice, actually, that this model is exactly equal. If you take these coefficients to write, it's some Q-deformed Heisenberg ferromagnet, which you can analyze the gap. This is not so, because I think I should wrap up. But what is nice is that we know the gap, and we can most likely finish off all the details of this adiabatic computation in this way, showing that one can do adiabatic computation with this model. Okay, so now, yeah?
This last model that you mentioned, you wrote the amendment for a chain.
Yeah, but I don't, in the, yeah, that's just the, yeah, this Heisenberg model, you mean this one?
Yes.
So that's the, that's, that Hamiltonian corresponds to the dynamics of the string, right? So I initially have my circuit Hamiltonian, which is actually a hopping Hamiltonian on a two-dimensional grid. And it's something where I have joint hopping between these guys. That's my original Hamiltonian. And, but I need to analyze spectral properties in a subspace, and the subspace is the space of these strings. And so I penalize or do whatever with the, I just, they're out. And the space of these strings is then one dimensional, right? It's just, it's always one dimensional, it's this boundary. So, and that's the dynamics of this original Hamiltonian that induces this dynamics. And I believe that, well, I don't know. If you would do this for higher dimensional circuits, you probably also get nice models for this, this boundary degree of freedom. But I haven't, I don't know. Okay, but this is nice because we have then the gap of at least this part of the Hamiltonian by which we can make progress. Okay, so, yeah, so there are two questions that, one I'm working on to massage. So I have a model where the particles are hopping jointly, and I think it would be nice to actually show with some perturbation gadget that you can reduce it to something like this. Hopping, some, you know, chemical potential, and perhaps an attractive repulsive interaction of this form between two modes. Because if you allow these, you know, I think there are results on QMA where it's on a graph you have these types of interactions. And you can also make this graph planar, right?
For make it planar for universality, but not
QMA. Oh, okay. Because that would show.
But we don't know how to do it. But the thing is that this is the joint hopping terms, right?
Yeah, it's
so
only.
So the unitaries that get applied.
No, they're part of the. They're unitaries. See, the thing is, it's very different. Every joint hopping term has a coefficient in front of it, which is like the amplitude of the, it's the matrix elements. Like if you have a C naught, right, there's different things that you do, and that's where the unitary goes in. Yeah, and all the other terms is only the joint hopping that one has to reduce like this. So I'm working, I can only reduce it to conditional hopping, and then I have to do, well, I don't know, it's a work in progress, but I think there's a chance that that would work. I'm not sure I get a repulsive interaction. But
the other thing is, like, if you were to do this, then you would get, because you're doing perturbation gadgets, you need to have large terms in front of them.
Yeah, right. That's, I mean, that, of course, there's no way around this, indeed, yeah. That's true. Okay, I should have put this there. No, so the advantage of this result is that it doesn't have large terms yet, because it comes straight from the quantum circuit. But then it's true that if you want to massage it any further, or you have to go back to this construction and start modifying it there. I don't know whether that's possible. But the interactions are more physical than I've seen in some of the other models. So I think it's the strength of this Mizell idea, basically. And so one other thing that I want to understand, but I don't really, is to see whether this is a kind of a discretized field, 1+1 dimensional field theory, and how would you, you know, something like Lorentz invariance, where is that sitting? Yeah, is it because I talked with David Gossett about it, is because if all my unitaries are generated by, you know, some Hamiltonian, can I capture this as a discretized field theory, but maybe plus extra stuff? Right? Because I have a circuit Hamiltonian, I also have excitations, I have more structure there, potentially. And I don't know yet how this works, so really I shouldn't say much about it, because it leaves me puzzled. Okay, that's it, yeah.